we have a special offer for Issues Etc. Reformation Club members. If you join or upgrade your membership in our monthly or annual giving program during January or February, we'll add the new Concordia Psalter to the list of current membership benefits. T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. You can find out the benefits of being an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Or contact Craig, 618-223-8385, or Craig at issuesetc.org. Join or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in January or February, and we'll send you the new Concordia Psalter along with your other premiums. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Thursday afternoon, February the 5th, we're going to take up the subject, just coming off that conversation about those college freshmen coming in. They are, well, they're now kind of the middle of the pack of a generation we call the millennials, born after 1980. That's a simple way of kind of counting or demarking the generation, but it doesn't tell you what makes this generation unique, what makes this generation different. I am at the trailing end, 1964 is my birth date, of the baby boom generation. And it took a whole generation for us to figure out what that really meant. Not just the demographics of how many babies were born between 1946 and 1964, but what this generation did, would do, how its ideas, its presuppositions, its worldview made a major impact on American culture. What about the millennial generation? And more importantly, the church's response, the church's engagement with that generation. Joining us to talk about it, Dr. Beverly Yonke, Executive Director for Christian Counsel at Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care, Chair of the Department of Social Sciences and Professor of Psychology at Concordia University, Wisconsin, author of an article in the latest Lutheran Witness magazine titled Their Way, Their Rules, Their Ruin. Dr. Yonke, welcome back to Issues Etc.
A pleasure to be with you.
What makes the millennial generation different substantively than their parents' generation, the baby boomers?
The boomers, well, I confess autobiographically that I share with you the tail end of the baby boom identity. And the boomers, when we look at them in summary, we see people who watched parents coming out of the Depression, out of the Great War, seeking stability, seeking certainty, seeking things that were sure and certain and safe and normal. And the boomers watched and sort of evolved away from normality, finding it remarkably predictable, and seemed to spiral into a counterculture of sorts. And as the baby boomers began to bloom, some of them started to move away from what had become kind of a consumerist, suburban ethos, if you will. The boomers started to look at matters of justice and equality and at matters of freedom and social relevance. And student activists, if you'll recall, were taking over college campuses, definitely motivated to ensure that their voices were heard at the time the Vietnam War was raging. And yet, alongside of this countercultural epidemic, if you will, we had a culture rising up that was all about love, and it was all about dropping out of a political life, and it was all about dropping out of their parents' normal and their parents' expectations. And the hippies are perhaps best remembered as one of the icons of the boomers' generation, and so they rebelled with clothes and hair and drugs and enjoying accessible birth control practices, which caused all of their parents and the church to wring hands and imagine that indeed civilization was on the brink of ending. By comparison, the millennials aren't interested in free love. They aren't interested in a great deal about relationships other than ensuring that their needs are met such that they have excellent control. They are very conscious of their environment. They are very conscious of the well-being of others around them, and they're most concerned that they are going to be okay at a time the world seems to be in tumult.
Now, I think where the baby boomers actively tried to rewrite the rules of their lives, according to at least the earliest ones, with their parents' values as a foil.
Absolutely. You get communes of all sorts and result of precisely that kind of movement.
The millennials don't seem to be looking at mom and dad's values and saying, I'm going to go the opposite direction. They seem to just be saying, I'm going to make up my own mind. Is that right?
I think that they have grown up in a culture which experienced the brunt of divorce unlike any previous generation. They have seen relationships that were supposed to be secure till death do us part devolve and come to horrific ends. And many of them who have come from families of divorce made a mental note, I don't want that for me, and I don't choose that for my children. That may have been the only conscious awareness were children coming out of families that experienced divorce. And if we look at the stats, that's about one out of two marriages. And so there was a sense that marriages weren't what they were supposed to be, couldn't deliver on the promises. And so I'm going to be very vigilant. I'm going to be very careful. I'm not going to make any mistakes. I am not going to find myself in a position having made vows that will trap me to a place where I will be unhappy, my children will be at risk, and I'm forever feeling as if I'm living out a victim mentality. So it's a lot about personal safety and not committing some of the mistakes that mom and dad may have made.
So when they look at, you say they view sex as sport, the millennials by and large, and that it is pure recreation, and as you say, uncoupled from the notion of marriage, family, children. Talk about that.
The millennials are action-oriented. The millennials are about doing. The millennials are not this remarkably reflective group of people. They recognize that sexual activity has been something enjoyed for centuries, and they don't want to miss out on that enjoyment, nor do they want commitment. They're commitment adverse, I think, might be an appropriate statement. They would see themselves as putting themselves in positions where sexual activity was convenient and had no lasting obligations for them. We used to sing the song, love and marriage goes together like a horse and carriage. There are no new applications to that. In fact, within the millennials culture, sex is not about love. It's certainly not about marriage, and most usually not about childbearing. The goal is exclusively physical satisfaction. And there's also the added benefit that one has the affirmation from time to time that he or she is regarded as desirable by someone else. So now sex is the new litmus test. Are we compatible? If we're compatible, let's see where the relationship goes, if anywhere at all. And cohabitation, as a result, is the new normal.
All right. It sounds like they've learned the unwitting lessons of the boomer generation that tried chemically and through all other ever means to decouple sex from family, from children, particularly from childbearing. They learned that lesson. And their conclusion is, we're the first generation that can actually do this. We're the first generation that can actually, because of the technology, because of what's available to us from the time we are hit puberty, and the freedom, the unprecedented freedoms of young people today with regard to kind of being able to act apart from their parents, we're going to be able to do this. We're going to be able to just, sex will be fun. Maybe I'll get married in the future, but that will be, of course, when I found the perfect partner of compatibility. Is that what you're talking about?
Absolutely right. And yet at the same time, we might see that as an expression of freedom. The millennials might instead cast it in language which says, do you realize the expectations that people have for us? Do you realize how difficult it is for us to get our education in place? Do you realize that after that, we're going to have to secure entree into a career, develop in a career? We're going to have to have financial stability. We're going to have to secure our own lodging. Those are the first obligations that the millennials are considering. And all of those are now becoming fundamental precursors to any thought about a lasting relationship. So as opposed to seeing this as a time of freedom from obligation, they see it as a time of remarkable responsibility, and they're going to go it alone because another may very well make the pathway more difficult for them. As opposed to the boomers, who had everything turned upside down and said, you know what? I'm going to find this person whom God has selected for me. I'm going to find this helpmate. I'm going to stand before God's holy altar. I'm going to vow to love, honor, and respect this person for the rest of our natural lives. And together as man and wife, supported by word and sacrament ministry, we will take on each and every one of the challenges. That is a natural part of moving into adulthood. So everything is upside down and backwards.
Dr. Beverly Yonke is our guest. We'll take a break here when we come back. We're talking about the church's response to the millennial generation. She used the term before for the millennial generation, commitment adverse. So what does that mean for dating and marriage? What does it mean for family, for childbearing? And what can the church say? How can it even enter the conversation with the millennials on this subject? It's Thursday, February the 5th. Dr. Beverly Yonke is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. What if we made it clear to the Sunday morning visitor that Jesus is actually present, forgiving sins? I've written the second part of my essay, Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper, and you can read it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Eric Rapp's journey from the New Age through Methodist Pietism to Confessional Lutheranism. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
How does confessional Lutheran theology measure up against popular yet false worldviews, ideas, and religions? Find out at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Friday, February 6th and Saturday, February 7th at Faith Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. Meet and hear regular guests Chris Rosebro, Dr. Joel Heck, and others at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 6th and 7th in San Antonio. flc-sa.org, flc-sa.org.
For 20 years, we've lifted our voices and instruments to the hymns of Stephen Starkey. Now, CPH has the first ever CD collection of Pastor Starkey's works titled, We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God. This 12-track CD includes nearly an hour of music from the most beloved Lutheran hymn writer of our time. Order now. Use promotion code URA. We Praise You and Acknowledge You, O God is only $15.99. CPH.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thursday afternoon, February the 5th, we're talking about the millennial generation and the church's response and engagement of this generation with Dr. Beverly Yonke, Executive Director for Christian Counsel at Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care. You'll find a link to Doxology at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Okay, let's talk about that. The characteristic you mentioned before the break was commitment adverse, although millennials kind of have a completely different way of understanding the commitment of marriage. You quote from Andrew Sherlin, who says that marriage is no longer a cornerstone upon which to build a life with another person, but a capstone that symbolizes that one has arrived. Talk about that, if you would.
For millennials, there's a clear understanding that marriages are for people who have their financial world in order, their career under control, and who have made life choices to meet their personal needs, and now they can surrender to a marriage. Millennials who marry, for the most part, tend to be individuals with a college education who have made some sort of career progress. Millennials who have not completed a college education tend not to marry. They tend to cohabit and move from relationship to relationship. So for those millennials who marry, they've done it all, had it all, and now they're prepared to surrender to what married life may actually require from them in the form of long-standing commitment to both a spouse and to children.
Now, to me, maybe I'm reading too much into it, Beverly, but to view marriage as a capstone rather than a cornerstone is at least to me sounds like a very individualistic way of thinking about marriage. That is, when I'm ready, and then of course the other person has to be ready because it takes two to tango. But when I'm ready, then I will do this, and it will show that I have, or it will at least kind of validate the fact that I have arrived. But it seems a more individualistic way of thinking about marriage altogether.
It clearly is, and that makes it consistent with a bit of the narcissistic binging of some millennials who have been raised in an environment of immediate gratification, who have been raised in an environment without a great deal of confrontation and great affirmation. For millennials who have, for the most part, been interested in meeting their own needs, marriage is a need they meet in their way, in their time, when they determine it's best. So cultural guidelines mean nothing, which means we've got an awful lot of millennials who are tearing across the landscape here with no particular GPS and totally ignoring the kinds of the signage the culture's past have prepared for them. The millennials who might consider marriage before having their lives completely under control are looking at renewable marriages. They could consider it for 2 years. They might try it for 5 years, as long as they could dissolve it. Marriage must meet my needs, or marriage is a threat to me.
There are, however, as you say, some unexpected facts about millennials, in particular very low teen pregnancy rate.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
Teenagers today have been the recipients of a wealth of information and a great deal of training, beginning very early on, about the threats of promiscuity and the threats of unprotected sex. We have some very sophisticated 7th, 8th, and 9th graders who can tell you in remarkable detail the horrors of STDs. And so although sexual activity continues, it tends to be less commonplace in the teen years than it ever was. There tend to be fewer teen out-of-marriage births. And now what we discover instead, that activity, some of the promiscuity and the out-of-wedlock births are moving into the millennials who are 21 to 25. So the children, the 15-year-olds, the 20-year-olds, are exercising great restraint out of fear and out of a desire to control their own well-being.
And we have to, in some sense, address the issue of their connectedness, a different kind of connectedness than their parents experienced. Now, their parents are certainly experiencing the connectedness of social media now. I mean,
right.
I think Facebook is more boomers than anyone else.
Yeah.
But the other social media has been just woven into the lives of these young people. Talk about that effect, if you would.
The millennials are perhaps the most self-expressive generation that we have ever known. They have their own websites, over 20 percent of them have posted personal videos online with some regularity. 75% of them have some sort of ongoing profile in a social networking site. There is a self-absorption. There is a self-expression. There is a social media entanglement where their life is what they portray to others through this very small window on the screen, which they can change and control, again, which is empowering to them and affirming to them. And so they can have relationships with hundreds and hundreds of people, get this, in lieu of life. They can have friendships with hundreds and hundreds of people in lieu of an engagement or a marriage. And so social media has become the great technological soothing agent for the millennials.
What is their attitude toward religion?
It's variable, as you might well suspect. And when we talk about millennials, we're painting an awful lot of people with a broad brush stroke, which is unfair. There are exceptions to absolutely everything we've said. What we understand from the data, only about 11% of millennials do not believe in God. What they believe about God is a remarkably different matter, as you might well suspect. We might well suspect to see a great deal of designer theology or the Burger King theology where they have it their way. I would guess that for those people who are even tangentially related to the church, they are very much consumed with what many have called the moralistic therapeutic deism of our time, where the central goal of life is to be happy and to feel good about oneself, and God can indeed cooperate with us in helping us to achieve that goal. The more traditional church membership, the more traditional understanding of a historical, biblical, Christian theology, the more confident understanding of a real God who has sent his Son to die for us, to purchase us back from our sin, to live in us and through us, and to routinely give us his gifts, those are far fewer among the millennials. And those are the people who tend, oddly enough, to be content with the concept of marriage that their boomer parents embraced. They have not moved through and beyond some of the cultural mainstays of their parents.
So with just a few minutes here left to us, Dr. Yonke, how does the church enter that conversation and engage this generation?
I tend to believe that it is all about parenting. I tend to believe that parenting, which starts with reading children Bible stories and talking with them before children can even clearly understand, where children are enrolled in Sunday school and attend worship with their parents, the finest modeling is to participate in a worship life of parents that is comforting and encouraging. For those millennials who are outside of that kind of a family relationship, and that doesn't protect millennials from inappropriate sexual conduct, but for those who haven't any real connection to the church, we as members within the church need to begin developing relationships with millennials. They are often very solitary people. They are often very lonely people. I enjoy the opportunity to talk with countless students out here at Concordia, Wisconsin. We have some wonderful, wonderful students here, and they are fascinated to talk about religion, fascinated to talk about faith, and they are interested in how faith has the capacity to change life. We need to engage them in that conversation, invite them to attend, and recognize, yes, they are going to be self-absorbed, and so let's talk about what it is Jesus Christ has done for them.
Dr. Beverly Yonke is Executive Director for Christian Counsel at Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care. You'll find a link at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. She's Chair of the Department of Social Sciences and Professor of Psychology at Concordia University, Wisconsin, and she is author of an article in the latest Lutheran Witness magazine titled Their Way, Their Rules, Their Ruin. Dr. Yonke, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks so much for letting me chat with you.
When we come back in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Jennifer Lall is going to join us from the Center for Bioethics and Culture Network. She has had a longstanding concern about what she calls exploitation, that is the exploitation of women both here and abroad, especially abroad, for in vitro fertilization and other in vitro techniques, egg harvesting, those kinds of things. Now, the story that's coming out of Great Britain is that they have recently moved toward passing a bill, moving toward passing a law that would allow the creation of three-parent babies. I don't understand the science of it. We'll get a little bit of that with Jennifer Law, but the goal here appears to be that it could prevent, or so say the researchers, if they're allowed to move forward, it could prevent certain kinds of genetic diseases that there are no treatments for. Well, maybe we can do this. Should we do it? Dr. Jennifer Law will be our guest. We'll talk about a bill allowing creation of three-parent babies in Great Britain. And then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer will join us a little later in hour two for Christ in the Old Testament. We'll be in Isaiah chapter 40. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.